Alright, let's get into my favorite book, Book of Hosea. Now, starts out kind of interesting. You got to understand what's happening. The children of Israel, the northern tribes, are about to go into captivity. In fact, they're going to be wiped out and spread throughout the regions of the world. I got a question for you. I remember when I was about 5 years old in El Paso, we lived on Pershing Street, which was a fairly busy street. And I was sitting out in the porch playing one day, and I saw a guy, and he was standing in the street about a half a block down with his thumb out. And finally some car stopped and picked him up. So I thought, well, that kind of seems like it'd be kind of fun. So I go out, and I'm standing out on the street, about 5 years old. You know, all of a sudden, I hear my mother, and she says, "Ernie, excuse me. Ernie, can I have your attention?" What do you think she did? Man, she started screaming. Why? Danger. You see, when things are going fine, it's nice to talk in a still, small voice. But when you see danger, you see life going, you see destruction coming, you don't use a still small voice. You do whatever you have to do to get that person's attention. And if it's screaming, hollering, grabbing, whatever, you've got to do it, and you've got to do it immediately. And so the book of Hosea is set in this setting. God sent two prophets to the children of Israel right at the end. One was Amos. And then he sent Hosea with a message for his children that were standing not out on the street in Pershing, on the Pershing Street. They were standing out on I-35 in the center lane, just meandering. And God is going to send a message to do the best He can to get that person out of that freeway. And so the book starts out. What's the first verse of Hosea 1, Roger? Roger's my designated reader. He volunteered because my regular one didn't show up today. All right. Verse 1:1:1.
Yeah. The word of the Lord which came to Hosea, the son of Beriah, during the days of Uzzah, Jotham, Azzah, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, during the days of Jeroboam, son of Josh, the king of Israel.
Next one.
When the Lord first spoke to Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, "Go take to yourself a wife of harlotry and have children of harlotry."
All right. Wow. What an opening statement. No really good day. How are you doing? How are you feeling? What's going on? Let me take your temperature. Go find yourself a whore. Now, one of the things that I am convinced is that when Jesus came to this earth for His 3.5 years of His ministry, He came to enlighten and elaborate, is that a word?
Yeah.
Good, man. Good thing I don't make my living by speaking. And put a light on the Old Testament. And we always need to look for a thread that runs through the Old Testament and through the New Testament, because it's always there. The Old Testament shows, in my opinion, a much more beautiful picture of God than the New Testament and Jesus' ministry. Sometimes we have to dig for it. We have to look for it. So we always have to remember a principle. The story is always about God. This book of Hosea is not about Hosea. It's about God. He is the star of this book. And Jesus came along to enlighten what's happening in the Old Testament. So, the opening thing is, Hosea, go get yourself a woman of ill repute. Now that's a shocker. But in the New Testament, we have another shocker that parallels this story. And that's a father who says to his son, "Son, here's one third of my inheritance is yours, and go spend it foolishly." Because you see, the story of Hosea is the story of Jesus told of the prodigal son. They're both the same story. One says, go find a woman of ill repute. We would think that's nuts. Randy, let's pick on Randy Mill. He can take it. He's been around me for 40 plus years. When Robbie was thinking about getting married, did you give him those words of advice? No? Okay. Just checking. Didn't think so. Because nobody in their right mind, per se, would give that advice. But let me tell you, no daddy in his right mind would say to his son, "Oh, you want to take your inheritance now? Sure, here it is. And go spend it foolishly." So you're going to see the prodigal story of the good daddy is just a retelling of the story of Hosea. My, the reason I love this book is God looks fantastic to me in this book. Now, Hosea goes through his things. Now, whether it's literal or whether it's an allegory, don't care. Not getting into that discussion. I'm interested in the principles of it. And that is absolutely fantastic. So here we find a person that has a person of ill repute, falls in love, she does him wrong. Now, let's pick up on the first text I gave you.
This is chapter 2, verse 5. For their mother has played the harlot. She who conceived them has acted shamefully. For she said, "I will go after my lovers. Give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink."
Okay, let's stop there. What did the woman say she's going to go do? And do what? Yeah, but putting that into today's English, what is she really saying she's going to do? Pardon? Get paid, and what else?
Get taken care of,
and what else? In her mind, is she having a good time? Oh, absolutely. In the prodigal's mind, what do you think was going through his mind? Good time. Now, have you ever, and I don't want a show of hands on this, have you ever wandered away and thinking, "Man, what a good time I'm having"? You see, the story of Hosea is the story of the prodigal, which is our story. That's why this book is unbelievable. It's our story. Don't know where you fit into that story, but I guarantee you most of you, if not all of you, have been in that story somewhere along the line. And so we find a woman. She's out what she thinks is having a good time. Now, the question we have today is we've got to see, how does God react to this? What does He do?
"Therefore, behold, I will hedge up her way with thorns, and I will build a wall against her so that she cannot find her path. and she will pursue her lovers, but she will not overtake them.
Okay, let's stop there. Now, that seems kind of harsh. Do you get what he says? What did he say in English?
Going
to make it tough for her. Thank you. Now, that seems kind of like vindictive, isn't it? That seems like kind of getting even. That seems kind of like, let me show you. So, how do you find love in those statements?
I think he just removed his protection.
Okay, well, that's nice. That's nice. And by the way, I think that's correct answer. Well, what does that mean? Seems pretty hard to me.
Well, it means that it's straight. You're going to suffer the consequences of that.
Okay, is that fair? Is it? All right, how many of y'all have little children? Or grandchildren? Yeah, I forget we're old people. Great grandkids. Man, I just had a flashback to my days of being 20 or something. Man. Yeah. So the little kid starts going over to the fire and going to reach out and grab some hot cornbread. So we say to him, "Whoa, sit back. Let's let him grab some of that hot cornbread, burn his hand, and teach him a lesson." Right? What do you say? Grab him. Why didn't God do grab? Why didn't Hosea grab Gomer? Why did the daddy let the prodigal go? Okay. Okay. I got a granddaughter that's test of anything in the universe, but I still give her advice. I still stop her at times and say things. Why? She's old enough. She's been through it. She's 27. She understands. But I still grab her every once in a while. Not by the throat either. Tried it. It don't work. So why? Why did he allow this?
Sometimes you have to let people... Some people have strong wills, and you just have to let them... You think you know everything? Just go ahead.
Same reason that the God didn't kill the Savior right away in heaven. He left him to see what he wanted to do. He wanted us to love him because we love him, not because we are afraid of him.
Okay. Absolutely. Yes, somebody else.
It's not free will if you stop them from doing everything.
Absolutely, it's not. You see, sometimes you have done everything that you can, and you have no other choice. In the prodigal, when the son came and asked his dad for his inheritance, it wasn't the first time. He had pleaded, he had cried, he had moaned, he had pouted, probably got mom on his side and everything. And finally, the daddy had no other recourse. When Gomer goes, there is no other recourse. And of course, the story is all about God's relationship with His children of Israel. His children. And he has no other recourse. He's hollered. He's screamed. He's pulled back. He's loved. He's cajoled. And now he has no other choice than to let the person reap the consequences of what they sow. And let me tell you, when this happens, God has a heavy, heavy, heavy heart. And so he finally says, "I have no other thing. I'm going to remove my protection. I'm going to hedge them in and let them do the only thing that I can do at this stage is let them reap the consequences of what they've sown." And this is what God has to do sometimes in our stubborn lives. None of us go out and look for prostitutes to marry, if you're a man. None of us kind of go through that. But what do we substitute when we wander away from God? See, that's the question. All right, next one.
And she will seek them and not find them. And she will say, I will go back to my first husband. What was better for me then than now?
Right. Who said that in the pig pen? Do you see the story? It's the same story. He sits in a pig pen and he says, I had it better. Back home. She says, finally, I've had it better. I'll go back to my first husband. And so God is playing this story to the children of Israel, who He loves, saying, can't you come to the same conclusion? I've had it better. I'm going to go back to where I had it better. And so we find the story. Now, next one.
Therefore, behold, I will, this is verse 14. Therefore, behold, I will allure her, bring her into the wilderness, and speak kindly to her.
Okay, now, here's God's response. See? Now I'm going to allure her. I'm going to start calling back. And I'm going to bring her to the wilderness, the tough times. But what does He say He's going to do in the wilderness?
Lure her back.
Lure her back. Now, what happened when God brought His children out of Israel? I mean, out of Egypt? Where did He take them? Pardon? Did you see the parallel? He took them to the desert where who did they need to rely on for their food? For their protection. Their heat. Their cool. Man, you think you get the message, don't you? And so God says, I'm going to lure her back. The prodigal says, I've got to go back home. And there was that daddy absolutely waiting. And when he came, hugged, kissed, right back. So God is working in the children of Israel's life with the message of Hosea, I love you, I want you back. I respect what you do. I've got to let you do it. But I've got to show you a different way. Next one.
Then I will give her her vineyards from there and the valley of Achor as a door of hope. And she will sing there as in the days of her youth, as in the days when she came up from the land of Egypt. And it will come about in that day, declares the Lord, that you will call me Isha, and she will no longer call me Balak. For I will remove the names of the Baals from her mouth, so they will be mentioned by the names no more. In that day I will also make a covenant for them with the beasts of the fields, the birds of the sky, the creeping things of the ground. And I will abolish the bow, the sword, and the war from the land, and will make them lie down in safety. And I will betroth to you me forever. Yes, I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice, in loving kindness and compassion. I will betroth to you me in faithfulness. Then you will know the Lord. And it will come about in that day that I will respond, declares the Lord. I will respond to the heavens, and they will respond to the earth. And the earth will respond to the grain, to the new wine, and to the oil. And they will respond to Jezreel. And I will sow her for myself in that land.
Okay. Do you get the picture? God never wants you to wander from Him. That's the last thing that He wants. But when you do, He does what He has to do, is to allow you to reap the consequences of those decisions that you make. Because that's the only way you can come to the realization, hey, just a minute, when I was with God, I had peace. When I'm here, I have no peace. A logical mind would say, I'd rather go back to the relationship that brought me peace. And God says, when you do that, I'm sitting here with my covenant of letting you again be my people, and I'm going to fill your life with the key word, loving kindness. You see, there is no bitterness on God's part. There is no you've got to do this on God's part. He's sitting there with loving kindness, waiting for His children to come back home. Pleading for them to come back home. Have you ever felt that calling? Have you ever been in a place where you have to sit down and you start looking at your life and saying, man, let me look at it this way. And this, one of the things I teach in selling is what we call a Ben Franklin close. That's where you draw a line at the top, a line down the middle, and you say, okay, Mr. and Ms. Prospect, since I sell security, say we're trained people to sell security systems, I'm going to list all the reasons that you need to get a security system. And so I teach them to list about 10 reasons. Now, you turn the pad around, and you, on this side, you write down all the reasons you think you shouldn't get a security system. Now, a wise old man named Ben Franklin, over 200 years ago, says that when you have a decision to make, you write down the positives, you write down the negatives, and if one outweighs the other, then that's the way you're supposed to go. So you write down why, and then let's see how it balances out. Well, first of all, it puts tremendous pressure on the person to put down why he doesn't want one, obviously. Let me tell you, that's a closing tool, and it's an excellent one. But God invites us to do the same thing in our lives. Write down when you're with me. Write down when you're not with me. Doesn't mean when God's with us, everything's just going to be perfect, because it's not. But you have peace of mind. You go through the valley, shadow of death, but I know you're with me. Over here, you're just saying, why me? Why has this happened to me? Can you imagine the people in West and the people in Boston this week? What's going on in their minds? I go to a race to see my son or my daughter, and now I have no legs. But it was Jesus, God's Son, that also went to Calvary. So we find God alluring back, wanting to show His love and His loving kindness. All right, how effective is it? Yes, ma'am.
I have a hard time with this because of what's happened to the Jews in my time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Good question. Since I don't ask answer questions, I let you all answer the question. Yes.
Back in the Old Testament, God gave them, the Israelites, the instruction to kill all of the Amalekites, even the king. And even the livestock, everything. And the people who went out to be obedient to the king decided that it would really be a good thing on their book if they just put a chain around the, a chain around the king's neck and drug him back and showed the king what they had done. God had said, kill the king, kill them all. But they didn't kill that king, and because they didn't kill the king, then his queen slipped into his bedroom at night, and the result was a child. And so that particular tribe was not wiped out, but they increased. And as I look at it, I believe down through the ages, they have continued to hate the Jews in an increasing manner because of what happened way back then.
Okay. The only thing I can do is to take Hosea. Because if the principle of Hosea is correct, then the principle is a thread that goes through. So a question, let's just take Hosea. At this point, what else could God do with these children of Israel? Now, I will ask you that question. Here's the Assyrians. Here's Hezekiah, who God spared his life at his request. And when they come to talk to Hezekiah to see what God had done in Hezekiah's life to spare his life, what does he do? And they went back and they said, tell me about the God. And they said, we know nothing. But man, let me tell you the treasures they've got. And they said, let's go get them. And that's the beginning of the end for the Israelites. So, what could God do in that circumstances?
Why does it have to be in our day? I don't understand that.
What can God do today with them? I mean, if you have a wayward grandkid or a wayward kid, a wayward this, what can you do? You reason, you plead, you hug, you kiss, you bribe, you do what, everything. Well, got to. Can't put them in a dungeon and chain them. They throw you in jail for that. Try that. Don't work. See, what can you do? This is a good question. That's why I like the Walters in here. See, they say what they're thinking, and I like that. This is a question of all ages. Is God fair? That is the question of eternity. Is God fair? The answer comes overwhelmingly to me, yes. Because He respects the decision that people make. And boy, this is why Hosea, to me, is the book of all books. Because when we finish, where am I? Yeah, I've got enough time. When we finish, I'm going to ask you the question. I won't do it to you directly, but I'm going to ask the question. Tell me what God could do different than to keep the Assyrians coming in and taking over the nation. They're right there. Yes.
It's really interesting when you see that word hedged their way. It wasn't that God was trying to add abuse as they were going. It was that God made it as impossible as He could possibly make it without taking their choice away to run away from Him.
Yes.
It was so painful. It was all of that.
Yes.
Where there was mementos everywhere.
Yeah. Absolutely appreciate that. Let's look. Remember, I'm looking for that thread. So let's go right back to the children of Israel in the wilderness. Who fed them?
God.
Who rescued them from the Red Sea?
God.
Who had the deal? You all know the answers. God, 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 God. Now they're getting ready to go into Canaan, and what do they say? Well, I can't do that. We think they're nuts. But I got to confess, I've been as nutty or not nuttier than that. So have you. So, a fair question is, why didn't they go into the land of Canaan?
They didn't trust God.
That's right. And He kept them for 40 years. They were 6 to 11 days, depending on how fast they went, to going into Him. And He kept them in the wilderness. And He said, let's try this one more time. By the way, what did they do for clothes? Nothing. What did they do to bandage their feet? Nothing. What did they do about all the snakes? Nothing. Until they got so stubborn that God said, I'm about to lose these people. So I'm going to step back And then I'm going to let the snakes do what they normally would have done for year after year after year after year. And then I'm going to give them immediately a way out. Do you get that picture? God doesn't do anything that He doesn't immediately give you a way out. So He says the snakes come in, there's murmuring, and immediately all you have to do is look and live. And some of them were so stubborn, they wouldn't even do that. Now, what do you do with a child that is so stubborn? You can't do a thing except cry. We go to the king. No, I'm going to answer your question because I like you. Him? I don't know. But you, I like. Now, king, they get into the land. Who was their leader? Who talked to them? Who took care of them? And what did they want? A king. Oh, everybody else got a king. Why?
Old people have kings that don't want us. We don't have it.
Yeah. So God says, okay. Don't think that's good. That's, by the way, what He said. I don't think that's good. But you pleaded, you pouted, you cried, you moaned and moaned. Probably got your mother in on it. Going to give you a king. And so God, boy, this is how beautiful God is. He picks a king. How'd He do? Pardon?
Terrible.
Gets the one they wanted. Saul, big, mighty warrior, no character. But that's who they wanted. God wanted Himself. Now, we just keep going. The thread's always there. Here comes Jesus. Last miracle He does is Lazarus raising. Man, if you don't think this man is the Son of God, I've already showed you that I can forgive sins. I've already showed you I can heal. Now I'm going to really show you who I am, especially the Sadducees. And He raises Lazarus after being dead 3 days. Raises him. Turns to the Pharisees, the ones that want to crucify Him, and said, "Now, who do you think I am?" And what was their answer? Kill Him. So what could God do? Now we got today. We got the little Arabs over here because of nice little Abraham trying to help God out, by the way. How'd that work out? And we got the children of Israel who said at the cross of Calvary, what? Pardon? Yeah, but what did they say? And what else?
His blood on us and our children.
What have they changed over the period of history? Please don't take this wrong. There's going to be, I think, millions of Jews in heaven. I think there's going to be people there. We're going to be shocked that are there. And there are going to be people we believe going to be there. We're going to be shocked that they ain't there. So I'm not saying that. I'm just saying as a nation, they rejected God. And God says, I no longer consider you a chosen nation. I now go to what I always wanted to do anyway, is look at you as individuals. So us that think that we're a great denomination chosen of God, we need to look at that. We have an awesome responsibility. We have insights, I believe, that we need to spread to the world. But boy, let's not take... I'll come to you. Let's not take laxity. Let's not take... umbrance or something, I don't know. Let's not take for granted, you know, that we're the only one. So the principle I look at, and then I'm going to bring it down. Some of you know my story, some of you don't. Some of you don't need to know it. But I'm just telling you, I've seen it in my own life. I am a testify. I testify to that. Now, you've been very kind.
I've been really
doing a lot of thinking this week with everything that's gone on. And I wonder, in the church, how are we supposed to fit in here? Are we doing the job that we're supposed to be doing? Are we calling on our neighbors? Are we showing God's love? Why are we losing so many of our youth?
That's a fair question.
Is it because of us older ones? Have we done something that we needed to change?
But see, let me answer. I'm running out of time. So let me answer that question for you best I can, because it deserves an answer. How many disciples did Jesus have? And what happened to one of them? Let me tell you, if 3.5 years with the Master at His feet, seeing everything, and then having the Creator of the universe wash your feet and look you in the face and say, I know what you're going to do, but I'm going to wash your feet. So, yes, we're losing our youth. And I think that's lots of responsibilities on the church, but it's on us as individuals. But when Jesus had 12 men and none of them understood till after He went to heaven who He was, that's why the Pentecost was so amazing. It was there they said, oh my goodness, this was God. And that's after 3.5 years. And one of them never got the message and betrayed Him. Hung Himself. So what makes us think that we're going to keep all? That we're going to keep all in our family? Well, Jesus couldn't keep one of them. The one. And He did everything in the world. You see that thread? The thread goes through. The further you get from God, the harder He worked. In His 3.5 years of ministry, He worked the hardest for the Pharisees. The story of the good daddy was for the Pharisees. They were standing right there. Judas, he was standing right there. He works the hardest. And we see it in Hosea. This is the insight. Rob has a great, if you haven't heard it, story of Abraham and Isaac. The insight to the heart of God. Let me tell you, and Roger mentioned it last 2 weeks ago. Absolutely right. Hosea seeing the heart of God. He goes and takes a woman of ill repute. God goes and takes a nation of ill repute. Unthankful. And He's pleading. Next.
Chapter 4, verse 6. People are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I also will reject you.
Okay, let's hold it right there. They're destroyed for what? Not keeping the Sabbath, not paying the tithe. Not knowing the 2,300 days? Like enough. About what? About God. Tell you, if you don't know God, none of this other makes any difference. Ask the Pharisees. If you don't know God, none of it makes any difference.
If they don't really know me and reject the truth about me.
Absolutely. That's why, again, I'm not plugging our ministry, but I'm just so thankful, so humble that we have, that you all have entrusted Rob and I with your prayers and your funds to go tell people that God loves them. That's the message that people are crying for, is God loves you. He cares for you. Okay.
I will reject you from me.
Now, let's go to the next one. No, that's fine. I'm running out of time.
Come, let us return to the Lord. For He has torn us, but He will heal us. He has wounded us, but He will bandage us. He will revive us after 2 days. He will raise us up on the third day, that we may live before Him.
Do you see the parallel there? He's allowed you to be wounded, but what will He do? Bandage you. He's allowed you to be hurt, but what will He do? And He'll rise, let you go through suffering in 2 days and rise up what day? Third day. He doesn't want that. Everybody wants an Adam and Eve experience with God, and He wants that experience before sin entered the world. Very simple. In the cool of the evening, God would like to come and sit down and talk to you. We don't allow Him. We don't want Him. We say it in any way we want to say it. We don't want it. No wonder He says, I stand at the door. Because He's a kind God. And we don't open the door. But He comes back. Finish it up. Last.
O Ephraim, what more do I have to do with idols? It is I
who am. Is this the last 14?
Yes.
Okay. Here's a conclusion.
Whoever is wise, let him understand these things. Whoever is discerning, let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the righteousness will walk in them. The transgressors will stumble in them.
Boy, that's the summation. What else can God do? In chapter 11, which I intended to get into, but that's okay. My favorite chapter out of the whole thing. God says to His children, I got to picture this with tears running down His eyes. Oh, my children, it was I who held you in my arms. It was I who fed you. It was I who taught you how to walk. It is I who love you with loving kindness. It is I who you are my children. But you don't want me. You don't want me. How can I let you go? How can I give you up? But I must. Because you're joined to your idols. What else can a father do for his children? Nothing. And so it's at the end of time. Everybody will admit that God is just. This answers part of your question. At the end of time, every person will say God is just. It's God is mercy. And then their next statement is, let's go take the city and kill them. And God there says the same thing. How? It was I who held you in my arms when you were small. It was I who fed you. It was I who taught you how to work, walk. It was I who held you in my arms. It was I who loved you with loving kindness. How can I let you go? How can I give you up? And with tears in his eyes, he has to say, you have chosen. I must. That is God. Father, Daddy. Old Testament's tough. But that thread runs through there, the message. No matter where we are in our relationship, it's why the life of David is spelled out. Up and down and up and down. It's why the life of Moses, the life of Joseph, life of Manasseh, up and down. And finally we come to the story of Hosea. Fell in love with a whore. Did everything he could to win her back. My Father, you fell in love with me. You did everything you could to win me back. I'm so thankful. Amen.